Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities, all you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about two movies, arguably with the same character.
Yeah, maybe not as linked as I thought before before we watched these movies.
Oh yeah, no, there's plenty of little nods and winks, but there is no actual linkage.
Right.
Yeah, so let's just dive in. Before we dive in, there's an ongoing chitter chatter on the internet about, or on Facebook at least, in these little podcast groups about people who can be divided over whether they think Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not. And then the people who don't care, and the people who are angry about it and want to fight about it. So occasionally there'll be some little trolling of people. But so I posted, hey, you know, turns out this week I watched two movies that turned out to be Christmas movies. The Conversation is a Christmas movie, and Enemy of the State is a Christmas movie.
Indeed.
But beyond that, and people acknowledge that Gene Hackman was great. And then it occurred to me that, turns out, is Gene Hackman America's Michael Caine?
Oh, I think that's a great analogy. Yeah.
I mean, he's been in everything. So he's not afraid to be in a movie that's not Oscar quality. And yet, I think he makes every movie better.
Yeah, he's one of those actors that is always good, no matter what material he's given.
Exactly.
I feel very similarly about William Hurt.
Yep, I could do that. So the first of our Gene Hackman movies is The Conversation, 1974, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, who we know from The Godfather Trilogy and Apocalypse Now.
Your all-time favorite movie.
It is, I think, yeah. Although, I don't know, this movie, The Conversation, holds a special place in my heart because every time I watch it, I like it a little better.
So you've seen it before then?
Yes.
All right. How long has it been since you've seen it?
Not long. I mean, I've seen it three or four times, but I think I saw it within the last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I knew it was on the calendar at some point. So had you seen it before?
I've seen it before. I probably haven't seen it in 22 plus years.
Okay, so this was a college movie for you?
Yes.
Okay. And what did you think seeing it this time?
It was not the movie I remembered it being. I had in my mind that it was more of like a political thriller. What it actually is sort of a contemplation of paranoia in a suspense movie that sometimes borders on horror.
Yeah, I can see that. It's a very small movie.
It is, yeah. And it's full of people you recognize, even if you can't quite place them.
Absolutely. And there's not a ton of actors. Unlike the second movie we're going to talk about, that is almost the polar opposite of this movie.
Yes, the other movie has every actor who might have been in something in the 90s.
Most definitely, yeah. So, did you like it the first time you saw it, and this time?
I had very fond memories of it. I remember liking it quite a bit. But I was, yeah, it has been so long, I almost got to watch it completely anew. And I did. I liked it a lot. It was really slow at times. These are the types of movies that are difficult for me to watch in the evenings when I'm tired. So it took me a couple nights to get through it. But everyone in it is so good. Even like Terry Garr. Seeing Terry Garr, she has just a couple minutes of screen time. But she's great. She's so kind of like flighty and weird and...
Yeah.
Just weird enough to be maybe sinister if you look at her through Harry's eyes. Which is actually everybody in this movie.
Yeah.
if you look at him through Harry's eyes.
As it turns out, looking through Harry's eyes is sort of the point of this movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a very subtle movie. And you're right, it is slow. The first time I saw it, that was my one criticism. Was like, oh my God, is this movie going to actually have any action to it at all? And the answer is not really. But there turns out to be lots of tension. And first, I'm gonna suggest people. It's a 1974 movie. If you can do it, see it. It's pretty great. It's got everybody you like. We'll tell you all the good parts anyway, but I don't think it's going to ruin your experience because there are things about this movie that I think I appreciated the second and third time I saw it more. But one of the things I liked from the very beginning was I'm pretty sure I saw the movie after I started editing this podcast. And so the fact that he's got this audio editing setup, sort of complicated and time consuming. I found fascinating, and I love that whole idea of that.
Yeah, the sort of very old school, very labor intensive type of surveillance
with all homemade equipment.
All homemade equipment, and trying to record a conversation, he actually records at least three, maybe more than three, different recordings and gets pieces, parts in each one. And then, has to kind of meticulously edit them all together seamlessly.
Yes. And deliver them to his client. And that's how this movie starts. We start with Harry Call, Gene Hackman, who we know from Heist, Enemy of the State, Twilight, and Young Frankenstein. Mm. And he is a private surveillance expert in San Francisco. And he's been hired by somebody that is only referred to as the director to record the actions of a man and a woman. The woman is Cindy Williams from Laverne and Shirley. And I forget how cute Cindy Williams is. And her name is Anne. And the man is Mark, Frederick Forrest, who was Chef from Apocalypse Now.
Oh, that's why he looks familiar.
Yeah, unrecognizable as Chef because he doesn't have the big mustache. And he's very, very wound tight in this movie, where he was less wound tight in Apocalypse Now, getting progressively unspooled in that movie. And so we see really kind of a gorgeous, I don't know if it's a crane shot, some kind of aerial shot on this square in San Francisco. And you get to hear these parts of conversation. And as this movie goes along, I mean, the movie is called The Conversation. As this movie goes along, the conversation itself gets more refined and more refined. And in the very beginning, it's clear that Harry doesn't care about what is being said. Harry cares about getting the recording he's being paid for. He is something of a perfectionist, let's say, and strictly business, and doesn't want to know what it's all about. We find out a little bit later why. But it's very important to him, at least, that he doesn't care what the whole conversation's about. But we, as the audience, get to hear little snippets from it. And then as the movie progresses, we finally figure out what the conversation is actually about. Turns out there's a twist.
Yes.
But, so Harry, by the way, Harry is 44 years old. What do you think about that?
That was a little troubling to see that.
Yeah, it turns out so was Gene Hackman. But he was intentionally playing a schlub.
Yeah.
So, and his assistant is John Cazale.
Yeah. Maybe the highest batting average of awesome movies.
Yes. Yep. He's, by the way, Fredo from The Godfather. His character's name is Stan. But he made 5 feature film appearances before he died of cancer. All of them were nominated for Best Picture.
That is crazy.
It is. It's amazing.
Have you seen all of them?
I have. I don't know. You know what? Well, at some point we're going to have to watch The Deer Hunter only so I can check it off my list, because I have never been able to get through it because it is so slow. The beginning of The Deer Hunter kills me. And I know there's some fun stuff at the end. Fun is maybe the wrong word.
Yeah.
But I've never gotten past them even getting to the jungle.
Deer Hunter. It's a great movie. I don't ever want to watch it again.
So the conversation, The Deer Hunter, Godfather 1 and 2, spoiler. And then what's the 5th one? Oh, is that Dog Day Afternoon?
Yes, it is.
Yes, that should be on the calendar. I actually have that all spooled up to watch that after seeing this. I wanted to see that again. I've seen it before, but it's been a while. The biggest thing I remember from that movie was that I remember it being a good movie. And I remember this particular vehicle. This police vehicle pulls up, and it's like a big, long sedan that's got about 16 doors. Like it's a 16 person van or something, but it's got each side has a set of doors for each passenger.
I do not remember that, but it sounds amazing.
Yeah. Well, when we watch it eventually, it is amazing. Stan is a weirdo, although again, it's 74. So everybody's got a certain amount of grit to them, I think. And Stan's
just a more competent version of Fredo in this movie.
Yeah, pretty much. But Harry's not teaching Stan all of his tricks. So Stan's a little dissatisfied. And Harry seems to be, I wouldn't want to work for Harry.
No. Harry would be a terrible boss.
Yes, he would. Yeah. And then, to make matters more weird, Harry's got a girlfriend. I guess you'd call her his girlfriend?
She was a prostitute, right?
I guess, in a way.
I mean, at the very least, like a kept woman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was paying her rent.
Mm-hmm.
But there seemed to be some sort of, at least from her point of view, she wanted some deeper relationship. And he definitely did not want the deeper relationship. But he still wanted the relationship.
Yes.
You can't have it both ways, turns out. You can't have complete privacy, which is his ultimate desire, and also relationships with other people.
Yeah. Harry doesn't want anybody to know his phone number. He is nonplussed when he finds out that the owner or the super of his building actually has a key to his apartment.
Oh, he's not happy about it. She left him a bottle of champagne or something or wine inside his door.
Yeah, and that freaked him out and opened his card.
Yes, yes, exactly.
So, he will no longer have mail delivered there.
Yeah, turns out Harry's got some issues with that.
Yeah, he's... To quote Wolverine, Harry is the best at what he does, but what he does isn't very nice.
Yeah. By the way, have we talked about the Wolverine podcast?
No.
The Long Winter? I think it's called Long Winter.
The Long Night?
Long Night, maybe, yeah. Have you heard it?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. That was pretty great.
I really liked it.
Yeah. So, anyway.
I immediately wanted to find more podcasts that were like it.
Have you found any?
No.
I mean, there's Homecoming, and there's Homecoming, there's Limetown. I'm really interested in Limetown right now.
I listened to the first season of Limetown.
Yep. I bought the book, which is a prequel, and I'm listening to the second season. But yeah, no, I I'm interested to see, especially with Marvel Studios, if they come up with something else fun.
Yeah. I think they're releasing a comic book based on the podcast.
Yeah, they should. It's a good story. Series. Yeah, it's a very comic booky story. So
yeah,
recommend. I'll try to put a link in the notes to Wolverine: The Long Night.
Is it free now?
I think it is. Yes.
Okay.
For a while, it was like Stitcher Premium.
Yeah, I actually subscribed to the Stitcher Premium just to listen to it.
Yeah.
So it worked. It worked, Stitcher.
Although it was my free trial. Okay, are you still a Stitcher Premium subscriber?
No.
Yeah, no, me either.
But if they come out with a season two, I probably will be again.
Yeah. Okay, so sorry. Tangent over. The other thing about Harry we know is that Harry is a musician, at least an amateur musician. He plays saxophone. But not the 80s Rob Lowe saxophone.
Definitely not. Yeah. Not even the 80s Sergio Lost Boy saxophone.
Exactly. Definitely not. Although, yeah, that would be an interesting twist. I love the piano score of this movie.
The music is really good.
Yeah, I was impressed. Like, I actually, for the first time in a very long time, I thought, I wonder if the score is available to get. Because I can imagine the piano being on in the background when I do stuff.
Like in a productive way? I thought the music was so good because it was really, I'm not sure if this is the right word, but it was like discordant with what you're seeing on the screen a lot.
Well, and sometimes it was actually discordant in order to set the mood. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think it was designed to make you feel anxious.
Well, again, I don't know if it would be productive for me to have it on. But it's kind of like the Bernard Herrmann Psycho score. Like I love that music.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it sets a mood.
For sure.
So now we have the job at hand. And like I said, this is a pretty small movie. The job is to have this recording done, to record this conversation, and then to deliver it to the director. And so he goes.
It had been so long since I saw this movie, and maybe I didn't even understand it fully the first time, but in my mind, this was a job for the government. That is not the case.
No, not at all.
This is a private company.
Yeah, remind me when we get to the next movie what I had in my memory. I had a little Mandela effect here about Enemy in the State, but we'll get there.
Excellent.
So, yeah, so he goes to turn over this tape to the director to get his money. And the director is not there. Instead, he talks to the director's assistant, Martin, who's played by Harrison Ford, who, of course, we know from Clear and Present Danger, Patriot Games, and Apocalypse Now.
And he is such a creep in this movie.
Did you realize, I didn't, did I mean, did you realize they intended him to present as gay? Yeah.
No.
I think it's all about his lime-colored suit and the cookies.
That's ridiculous.
And I think it was also to make him a little sinister, too. To give him that affect, to make him more sinister, I don't know.
Was he also supposed to be gay in Apocalypse Now?
I don't know.
Because I thought they were the same character.
Well,
the kind of smarmy henchman, creepy dude.
Yeah, a little bit. Although, again, you don't know what the director is the director of. So you don't know how powerful or scary these people can be.
Right.
And Harry doesn't care. He's like, I'm here to do a job. I'm going to do the job. But part of the job is he's going to turn the recording over only to the director.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because he is a little bit, at this point, yeah, I think he's already just a little bit disturbed about what's on the tape.
Yeah, it's actually quite jarring to see Harrison Ford be a creep.
Yeah.
Because when I was growing up, he was always like the hero, the man's man, the action star.
Yeah, maybe he was roguish and bent the rules sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think the first time he wasn't ever like one of the protagonists was the movie with Michelle Pfeiffer. Anyway, he turned out to be the bad guy. The twist was that he was the murderer of that movie. And it was they sort of used his reputation to make that a twist of the movie. Because he was like this dashing professor. And so it was really unsettling for him to be the bad guy of the movie in a surprise. So it's weird to sort of see him and realize that he was in these kind of like small, cool, weirdo roles like this early on in his career before Star Wars.
He's right off of being a, carpenter on sets, right? Isn't that the lore?
Oh, I don't know.
I think he was a carpenter building sets when they discovered him. Or maybe at the time of Star Wars. Although I think he had been in THX 1138.
That's a good story.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So we have this conversation itself, and these people are obviously they're having a conversation walking around the square. By the way, was the mime creepy?
Yeah, they're always creepy.
Yeah, how would I guess I've never seen a mime in the wild, but it seems like a mime is begging for a punch in the face. Is that part of the shtick?
I guess. I don't know. If you punch a mime, do you still have to pay him?
I don't know. Do you pay a mime just to go away?
Probably.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so in this conversation...
I'm going to hire a mime for your next birthday.
Please don't. So a mimogram? We don't want that. So we have this conversation we keep going back to, and Anne and Mark are talking, and they're really furtive, and they're walking around so they can't be heard. She thinks her phone's being tapped. You get the impression that maybe they're having an affair and she's cheating on her husband, so maybe the director is her husband. And Harry, he's said, no, I'm not going to give the tape to anybody but the director, so I'll be leaving now. And he starts to think about the tape a little more, have more
he
time.
He actually has to rip it out of Harrison Ford's hands.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's how you know Harry's a crazy person.
Exactly. So, and then, of course, because Harry won't give up any of his personal life to his girlfriend, she sort of breaks up with him. And then he ends up going to a surveillance conference, which you think that... The thing about Harry is that while he wants his own privacy, he also has pride in his work, and he is actually known in his field. So the one place he can go and feel like a big shot, or at least comfortable, I don't know, getting too much into the psyche of this movie, is at this convention where we have some fun stuff.
Wait, hold on real quick. Harry is super paranoid.
Yes.
But is Terry Garr a spy?
We don't know.
I'm asking you.
Yeah.
Is she a spy?
But who is spying? Well, who's spying on Harry?
And it could be the company he's working for. It could be one of his former clients. It could be somebody who he surveilled before.
The government?
Government?
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't think so. I didn't think she was either a prostitute or a spy. I just got the impression that she was a much younger woman that was sort of taking advantage of him. Well, they were taking advantage of each other.
Then why did she disappear?
Well, there's that. Well, no, because he was stop paying the rent, right?
Like her phone number?
Well, that's true.
Didn't exist anymore?
Yeah, okay, you're right. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, maybe she was... Who knows? That's weird. That becomes more conspiracy theory. So Harry goes down to this convention.
Yeah, at the convention, you find out how famous Harry is in his field, because when people realize it's him, they just want to start giving him shit.
Exactly. Yeah, they want him to endorse their products, and he's like, no, it's crap. All this stuff is crap. And we meet Moran, who is played by Alan Garfield, who is always a slimy guy. I think he spent his entire career playing a slightly slimy guy.
What else has he been in? Because he looked really familiar, but I could not place him.
He has not been in anything we have talked about, but I can look it up real quick.
Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Oh, yes.
That's probably it.
Yep. Yeah, Beverly Hills Cop 2. Let's see. The Ninth Gate.
Is that a Polanski movie, The Ninth Gate?
Is it maybe? Yes, it is. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I know. I remember not even really particularly liking it, and then it was, I saw it in the theater, I'm pretty sure. A lot of ones and twos on TV shows, that kind of stuff. He was in the remake of Diabolique. He was in Citizen Kane, which is a movie I'm trying, a TV movie I want to revisit, or maybe watch for the first time, I can't remember. He was a reporter in Dick Tracy.
Citizen Kane is James Woods?
Yeah. Yep, as Roy Cohn, I think. But he does a great job being a slimy guy. Also, Moran, he wants to do business with Harry, but he has a very, the game type of negging that he does. That's the best I can describe it is. He's not a particularly pleasant guy about trying to make a deal with Harry.
No, he cannot hide his personal motivations.
Yeah, and it turns out he's from the East Coast, and although he's based in Detroit at the moment, he knows Harry from when Harry worked in New York. And we find out later that Harry had worked for the DA's office or something, and they had taped some mob figures. I think that was loosely based on like a Jimmy Hoffa situation, where based on the surveillance, the mob thought they knew who planted the tapes or who taped them, or who talked. So this guy and his family were killed in a brutal fashion. And so that's part of why Harry is practicing compartmentalization.
And paranoia.
Yes.
Because he knows how easy it is to bug somebody, and he knows what the consequences can be of being bugged.
Exactly. So, for some reason, I don't, maybe because Harry's lonely, even though there's obviously this sort of antagonistic relationship between Harry and Moran, he decided, and also we find out that Stan, after having a little squabble with Harry about basically not getting the equivalent of a promotion, being let in on any of the secrets of the trade, he's not gone to work for Moran, at least for this convention. But then they...
Oh, is that who Stan was working for? I didn't even catch that.
Oh, no. He was wearing the same color blazer. Was going to take over the stand when the guys went to get a drink. So, yeah.
And at the convention, Moran demonstrates this magic phone bug that he has, right?
Yes, with her harmonica. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, are we to believe that that is the magic phone bug that is getting Harry at the very end? Something similar to that?
That's what I got out of it.
Yeah, that's what this note says. Although, it's funny, because even watching it now, I think it doesn't answer the question as much as it makes you wonder whether there even is any, like... Well, there is some sort of bugging going on. But, well, we'll get to the end when we get to it. But, anyway, so they all end up going at, like, an after party back at Harry's workplace, which just seems ill-advised.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we have this lovely scene with one of the partygoers, Meredith, played by Elizabeth McRae, who was working at Moran's convention booth. She's a showgirl, also a prostitute. In a very, I didn't even realize it at first, but there's a great scene where there's some shenanigans about Moran actually bugging Harry and then making him look a fool. And then Harry kicks him, gets mad and wants everybody out. And but she stays behind because she's made a little love connection with Harry, which I believe is Moran's whole plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's supposed to seduce Harry and maybe take the tape or whatever she can grab, which she does. But before that, Harry puts on the tape, which is weird.
Yes.
And he's trying to figure out this puzzle as he's going to be serviced by this prostitute. in a very non-sexy sex like scene, you know, it's not really even a sex scene. It's just like a pre-sex scene. The least sexy.
I thought he was like passing out because he was drunk.
Maybe. But he was definitely listening to the conversation and it was disturbing him. And she has this whole little speech to him about, hey, it's just a job. It has no feelings. You just do the thing and then you're done and then you go about your day. Mm-hmm. Which is, just, she's just telling her own perspective on what she's doing that night too.
Yes, she's narrating her own actions.
Yeah, which is great. So he wakes up and finds out, yeah, the tape is gone. So he is freaked out, very unhappy. And then all of a sudden
Harrison Ford has hired Moran, right?
I think so, yeah. That's the implication, I think. Because Harrison Ford calls him at his home number, which, of course, he claims doesn't exist.
Right.
So he says, yeah, he's got the tapes, and that's fine. And he can come by the office to pick up his money if he brings the photos that he took. And that seems like a trap. But Harry doesn't really have a choice. Because he definitely wants his money. So this is where he goes back and finds out the director.
Also, that was a really freaky dream he had.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He had a dream where he is following.
That was so bizarre.
He is following Shirley up the, I'm sorry, Cindy Williams character, up the stairs of this, whatever this park thing where they did the audio taping. And he says in the dream, he's worried for her. He thinks that they are going to be killed as a result of what he has just taped. And that's mm-hmm. what he's freaking out about. So now all the pieces are pretty much put together. This is why Harry's worried, is he wants to maybe try to persuade the director into doing anything about the tape. He doesn't want anybody hurt. And in the dream, he actually spells it out to the mysterious woman in the mist as he's not afraid to die, but he's afraid of murder.
Who isn't?
Well, and so, yeah, so Harry shows up and we meet the director. And the director is Robert Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
Who, of course, we know from Thank You for Smoking, Apocalypse Now, Network, and All the Godfathers. And the director is none too pleased about the contents of the conversation. And Harry's trying to persuade him or find out what's going to be done about the conversation. But of course the director basically dismisses him. So much as telling him, don't count your money here. You need to leave.
Yeah. And Harry deduces that that woman is his wife.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In the opposite years out. Yes. She is his wife. And
I was thinking daughter for the longest time.
Yeah. Could have been,
but no,
no, definitely wife. Yeah. Younger wife. And so obviously that this is their relationship. And so Harry's put all the pieces together that the director might actually have this wife be killed. So there is a hotel and with the room number and a time mentioned in the conversation. So he goes over and rents an adjoining room and he does his little surveillance shtick where he puts a microphone through the wall. And I thought that was all very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Got to actually see some spy craft.
Yeah.
I liked it.
But he is freaking out because he hears an argument and he goes out into his balcony, the balcony that's divided by a glass partition, and sees blood on the window.
At any point in this movie, did you consider that Harry is an unreliable narrator?
I think maybe at one point I don't know. Did you?
It was around this time after his little psycho dream and the weird reaction he had to seeing somebody's blood-smeared head smash against the next-door window.
And didn't we get a flash of that even before he goes to the hotel?
That's what woke him up out of his dream, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So he is some sort of psychic, just like Terry Garr.
Yeah, so to me, it was unclear whether he was really seeing this or he was hallucinating. If he was so paranoid that it was starting to warp his reality. And then it didn't help when he was looking at the next door room the next morning.
Well, but before that, so he hears the fight and he sees the bloody head smashing against the partition, and but he doesn't call for help. Instead, he freaks out, turns up his TV, and crawls into bed and falls asleep.
Yeah.
So that's another weird part of it. That's when, you're right, the unreliability of him.
Also, was that the real Flintstones music? That was some freaky stuff.
I don't know whether they tweaked it a little bit.
I really hope they did.
It was actually, I think it was Francis Ford Coppola's voice being the newscaster talking about Watergate. Which, by the way, this movie was released after Watergate, after, like, I think the tapes became a big deal, the recordings. But it was finished before that ever came to light.
So oh, funny.
This was just a happy coincidence for them. Wiretaps and stuff were in the zeitgeist. Anyway, so he goes to the hotel room next door the next day, sneaks his way in, and everything is all clean, like nothing had happened. And then I thought, did Kubrick steal The Shining? Like, or maybe it's just a horror trope when he flushes the toilet?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because that was very creepy.
Yeah, that also didn't seem real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't think it seemed real either. Yeah, so he then goes to see the director. And we see this whole... He tries to get up the stairs, and he tries to be like macho, but he's not Harrison Ford.
No, it did not work out well for him.
No. But as he is booted out of the hotel, he sees a, I think it was a Mercedes, a foreign car, European car.
It had 16 doors.
Not quite. We find out then that instead of the director in the car, it's actually Cindy Williams, the wife. Mm-hmm. And from the newspaper she's holding, her husband, who's the chairman of the board of a corporation, director of some sort of big corporation, was killed in a car accident, tragically. And there's a whole thing about he's in the lobby when she and then the other guy, chef, were having the conversation with in the original conversation. They're going through the lobby with Harrison Ford, and reporters are asking her about, the whole organization or whatever.
And Harrison Ford looks punchably smug.
Yes. And this is where Harry realizes, oh yeah, he has misread the entire situation. This whole thing he's been fixated on was he'd kill us if he had the chance or whatever. Instead of being, oh, we're worried because he's going to kill us, it was just justifying the fact that they were going to murder him. Well, he'd kill us if he had the chance.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's all a tone thing. Got to be careful about your tone. Even when you don't, even when you think you're being, having a private conversation. And then Harry goes back to his own apartment and listening to his jazz records and playing saxophone, and his phone rings, which again is unsettling. He doesn't answer it, but then it rings again and he picks it up, and, Harrison Ford tells him that, hey, we know that you think the whatever, but just keep this to yourself. We'll be listening. And then they play him a recording of himself playing saxophone. So this is where Harry finally flips his chicken and tears apart his entire apartment down to like the slats between the walls, looking for, looking for bugs, but unable to find it. I thought if nothing else, the art direction in this, the set direction was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, Harry's just a paranoid guy who, I mean, it's a little parallax view, right? I mean, you don't really know. Maybe this is as simple as just a corporate, like, film noir kind of thing where mm-hmm. the wife kills her husband who happens to have surveillance connections.
Yeah, well, I mean, you skipped over the very end where he never finds anything in his apartment.
Yes.
And his reaction is to just go back to playing the saxophone?
I guess, yeah. What else is he going to do?
He's a crazy person.
Well, yeah. Well, hey, even up to this time, I thought maybe it would be in the Virgin Mary. He'll find a bug in the Virgin Mary. But, yeah. And I've seen the movie before. So, So, I liked it. It was very, very simple. It took it definitely was paced. It took its own sweet time to tell the story. But it needed it to ramp up the tension, I think, and to kind of get the full Harry treatment.
Yeah, and it does that so well. I mean, every scene in this movie makes you more uncomfortable than the last scene.
Yeah. And you're sympathetic toward Harry, or at least I was sympathetic toward Harry, and yet certainly didn't want to be Harry's friend.
Yeah. Yeah, you're on his side, but you would not want to be around him.
No. And he's not like he's a hero. Because he actually, his profession is not super virtuous, and he doesn't actually like do anything heroic. He doesn't save the day.
No.
Yeah.
And if he had understood that it wasn't about a damsel in distress, he might not have cared at all.
Exactly. Yes. Yep. Could have saved himself a lot of trouble by keeping that code and not caring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's kind of a noir sort of thing too.
A man's got to have a code.
Yeah. So, was it worth it?
Yeah, I think so. This movie is, I think, a gem. I mean, it's definitely a throwback. I can't imagine how the younger generation would react to a movie like this.
Have you watched The French Connection?
Not in a long time.
Yeah, it does not hold up. It's another like great movie or whatever. In fact, I think he won an Academy Award for it. Gene Hackman did. But I don't think it holds up. And to me, the technology has changed. But I think the story itself is pretty timeless, right?
Yeah. I mean, what? Cops and robbers.
Yeah. It's just a straight up film noir kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah. So, yeah. I love this movie. I think it's great. And it reminds me how much I appreciate Gene Hackman.
Yeah, and Francis Ford Coppola used to make really good movies.
Yeah, he did. he had a pretty good run there.
He did.
Yeah. You know what kind of turned it? And again, this is a movie that I tried to watch a couple years ago. I was actually looking forward to watching. This was in that brief period of time where it was between everything being available streaming and things were going out of print, you know, that period of time where it's hard to find stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where I had to go.
Was it Dracula?
It was. And that is not a good movie. And people talk so fondly about it, and it's got lots of stylish elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was hard to watch. It was so bad.
Yeah. That movie makes me question why Winona Ryder gets blamed for ruining Godfather Part 3.
Well, I think she on Bram Stoker's Dracula, she got a pass because she was seen quite often opposite Keanu Reeves, which he may be a compelling actor and a nice guy, but he did not do a good job with the movie. And Gary Oldman was hamming up so much. I mean, I had forgotten, maybe because this was a period of time where they was telling like Dracula as a love story, which as it turns out, Dracula is not a love story. I thought for a while it was because of that movie, I think, but it's just a straight up monster story.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Oh, well, Francis, I don't know. Have you ever had his wine?
I'm sure I have.
Yeah. Okay. But not noteworthy.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, I had one more question for you.
Okay.
When you think of Gene Hackman, what are like the first two roles that come to mind for you?
Well, let's see. Definitely, I think of Lex Luthor.
Yep, that's number one.
What would another one be? He's been in so many things. I don't know. What's your second one you think?
Yeah, I think this is just generational, but for me, Crimson Tide.
Yeah.
He's so great in that.
We need to have put that in the calendar sooner than later. It's been on there for a long time.
Yeah.
It just keeps getting bumped around. A lot of people in that movie, too, that are in these movies.
Yeah. It made me think that after we get done with Christopher Nolan, we should just go through Tony Scott's filmography.
I thought that we had, actually. Or I thought we were still doing it.
We have done a bunch, as it turns out. And maybe we don't want to do too many of the ones that we haven't already visited.
Yeah, because we've just going to Enemy of the State, 1998, directed by Tony Scott, who also directed Domino, Man on Fire, and The Last Boy Scout that we've talked about.
Oh, The Last Boy Scout.
I'm telling you. Two of the three best movies we've ever talked about right now. Actually, that's not true. one really good movie in there.
But did Tony Scott make... Did he make a movie that was not at least enjoyable upon first viewing?
Oh, I'm sure. No. I mean, yeah. I can't imagine one. Enemy of the State, by the way, before we talk about it in depth, Enemy of the State is nothing but enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
It's a fun movie.
I assume you watched The Conversation first?
Yeah. I actually watched them both back-to-back on the same night.
Oh, wow. I think that's the way to do it, because Enemy of the State is so light.
Yes.
Compared to The Conversation.
I mean, Enemy of the State has so many more characters and so many comic relief type characters and comic relief moments.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because the main character in Enemy of the State is Will Smith, up to this time known more for comedy. And maybe because Gene Hackman, who appears as almost the same character as in The Conversation, doesn't show up until 57 minutes into a 2 hour and 15 minute movie.
And featured way more prominently in the climax of this movie than I had remembered.
Yeah. This movie will be a place to everything I like and don't like about these kind of movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's got everything.
Enemy of the State, 1998. It was Bruckheimer movie, right? It has to be. It totally felt like a Bruckheimer Simpson movie. But was Simpson gone by this time? Yes. So it's produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. Has that exact feel. This was like a highbrow version of the type of movie Con Air is.
This is a movie full of people that we love. By the way, as all Tony Scott movies, it's a gorgeous movie.
Yes.
It really is beautiful. And the action scenes are great. And the plot isn't...
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. It's not even all that complicated. There's a little bit of twists and turns, but it's all about getting from action piece A to action piece B to action piece C with some comedy thrown in between to lighten the mood.
Yeah, and an overarching social commentary about a surveillance state.
Yes. Which turns out, again, this movie had some weird parallels. So, like the conversation had this strange parallel to Watergate that wasn't intended. Whose character was born on 9/11 in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of, this movie is all based, the whole opening is Congress is going to pass what is basically the Patriot Act.
Yes.
I mean, that's all we have. It's law now.
Yeah, that was something that I found a little depressingly comedic was how the overall theme of this movie is we have to protect our civil rights because it's so easy for Big Brother to be watching us. And, fast forward to now, we don't give a shit.
Yeah, it's like...
It's happening. It's worse. It's easier than ever. We don't give a shit.
It would be like watching Return of the Jedi and then looking up in the night sky and seeing the actual Death Star.
Exactly. But being like, that's cool. At least I've got this cool phone.
So Congress is close to passing the Patriot Act to expand surveillance powers of law enforcement agencies. And Congressman Philip Hammersley, played by an uncredited Jason Robards from All the President's Men, is trying to stop the bill because he believes it's an invasion of his privacy. While Thomas Reynolds, John Voight, who we know from Tropic Thunder, 2004's Manchurian Candidate, and Heat, is trying to push the bill through to confront growing terrorist threats against the U.S. and advance his own career. So Hammersley is not going to be persuaded to change his vote. Irritated that they interrupted him in his own private time with his dog. And then they kill him. Specifically, Barry Pepper kills him.
I love Barry Pepper.
I love Barry Pepper too. Did you know that in 2005, Barry Pepper played Tom Ripley in a movie called Ripley Underground?
You've told me that before. That's the only place I've ever heard of this movie. To me, it's still unconfirmed that it actually exists.
Have you seen the John Malkovich Tom Ripley?
I have, with Dougray Scott.
Yes. It's very interesting.
It's so bizarre that those movies exist.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. So, if anybody knows how to find a copy of Ripley Underground, let us know.
It's not a real thing.
Okay, well... So anyway, blah, 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 they kill this this important congressman. And it would have been a perfect plan, except that there's some sort of wildlife biologist who set up a Sony video camera in a box across from the boat launch or whatever where this thing is found.
Placed there by Earl Hickey.
Yeah, here's the thing. I remembered, in a Berenstain Bears fashion, I remember instead of Jason Lee running from place to place with this video being chased and surveilled by satellites that were pinpointing his exact position, I had remembered that as Will Smith running.
In his bathrobe, right?
I don't know about his bathrobe, but I thought he was like wearing the athletic gear running around. But no, that was all Jason Lee. A totally different guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for some reason I remembered Will Smith running around in his bathrobe trying to avoid satellites.
Now, it turns out Will Smith has a totally different role in this. He is actually a corporate lawyer. A cutthroat... I'm sorry, what kind of lawyer is he? He's a labor lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, a lawyer of the people.
Sort of. He's the, anyway, he's a very successful guy with the wife and kids, or kid. So we meet Robert Dean, who is, again, Will Smith from iRobot. And Dean, actually, we see him in a meeting with a mafioso by the name of Polly Pintero, played by Tom Sizemore, also uncredited. And we know Tom Sizemore from Big Trouble in Heat, but Tom Sizemore has been in every movie ever.
Well, he took a break for a while.
Well, he did, yes. But he better be paying his bills because he has had a lot of roles. So, yeah, he probably has a dozen movies in pre-production or post-production. So, anyway, so we have Jason Lee, who finds out he's got the video of this death of a congressman. And he calls up his buddy who runs like an underground paper or something. Not underground paper, but like an independent paper.
Mm-hmm. I think they called it a newsletter.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Some sort of crunchy granola anti-war guy. So John Voight, again, he plays the devil in this movie. He's the evil government person who's going to use all of his resources within the National Security Administration, including a whole gang of Keystone Cop thugs and computer techies and individual satellites that will pinpoint individual people, which at the time seemed pretty outlandish.
Yeah, not anymore.
Now, I don't know how many satellites they have around, or whether they can change their, like, instead of grabbing a random satellite to change its direction, whether you would just pick a different satellite and look on down through the clouds to see stuff. But everything else seems pretty plausible in this movie, like 20 years later.
You didn't watch a lot of 24, did you?
Just watched the first season.
There's a lot of retasking satellites in 24.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems problematic, but so I have this weird fear of not of nuclear war, but of this idea that all it would take is some piece of space shrapnel to rip through a satellite or like a big object like a space station and start this ping pong effect of destroying all the satellites in orbit. Because everything is in a very small area, like the geosynchronous mm-hmm. area. I don't know whether that's possible or not, but it seemed like something they said on the news could happen. And the more junk that appears in the sky, I don't know. Anyway, apparently there's some place that actually tracks all of the junk in space.
Hmm. Well, that might be good because we would need to clear the junk out of the way to defeat gravity
yes.
and head out to Saturn.
For sure. So anyway, Will Smith goes to buy lingerie for his wife, and he bumps into this guy he knew in college, Jason Lee, who slips this video into his one of his shopping bags, and then runs off and gets hit by a fire truck?
Yes.
In a very nice action scene. I mean, again, this is going to be a movie where I'm going to yada yada through a lot of the action scenes, but this movie is worth seeing because of the action scenes. And it's not worth seeing because of the intricate plot.
No.
Or the nuanced acting. Because remember I said there was NSA Keystone Cops? We have actual, almost like central casting Keystone Cops from the 90s, Jake Busey from Contact, and Scott Kahn from Ocean's 11 and Novocaine. So Bodie Elfman from Collateral and Sneakers. We've got Jack Black from Mars Attacks. And Seth Green, who is...
Tropic Thunder,
yes. Jamie Kennedy. And Seth Green from Rat Race and Pump Up the Volume. By the way, also uncredited. I don't know how this uncredited stuff works. I don't know if it's all Vince Valoof. But Philip Baker Hall should have got a credit for this movie, but didn't. And he's been in Boogie Nights, Zodiac, The Sum of All Affairs, The Talent of Mr. Ripley, and The Rock.
James LaGross was briefly in this movie.
Oh, was he? And who's he? Where do we know him from?
The Last Winter.
Okay.
And he's got such a... He makes really weird choices. He was a cop in another movie for just like a few seconds. Zodiac, maybe?
Oh, maybe.
He's in Zodiac. So weird. It's like he takes these nothing roles.
Or maybe he applies for it. Maybe he auditions for every role, but can only get like cop B or NSA agent X or something.
Look, he was the headliner of The Last Winter.
Yeah, there you go. So I just listened to a podcast, a Doughboys podcast, where they had made one of their Doughboy doubles, their Patreon-only episodes available to the regular stream. And I can't remember the guy's name, but they ostensibly the conversation was about soups, but the reason why the conversation was about soup is because this guy, who is a fairly athletic guy, in his 30s, maybe even late 20s when this happened, maybe early 30s, was playing baseball. And this is going to get gross here. I apologize in advance. I'll make it as painless as possible, although it was pretty much a 20-minute conversation during this podcast. He went in to slide... And like slide into second or something. And it was one of those slides where you like pop up so you can try to run if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, what happened was not what he was expecting. He ended up sliding over his spikes and tore his rectum.
Oh.
So much so that when he finally got to a doctor who looked at it, it was like, ooh, yeah, this because they thought it was maybe some sort of like, anyway, it's they're like, oh yeah, you tore this and we can see the muscle. And his choices were they could do surgery, but one of the possible consequences of surgery was that he would be incontinent permanently. So like, that's kind of a, that's a wager you want to kind of think about. So he did everything he could to avoid that. But that meant that for like a year and a half, he was in pain for 12 hours after every time he used the bathroom. And he ended up restricting his diet to things like soup. Like no nuts, no seeds, no anything. anything at all. I mean, he was seriously down to like soup. And then after that, he finally went and they did like a smaller surgery than the scary kind, where they put a couple stitches in and then gave him, injected Botox into like his rectum so that it kind of wouldn't move for a little bit. So it'd give it time to heal. And he's like, yep, I've had some work done. I've had Botox done. But he's now much better. And the 40 pounds he lost, which he did not really have to lose, he has gained back most of. So he's happy about that. Although he still has fond memories of soup. Bittersweet.
That's surprising.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. Be careful with sports, I guess is my question, is my suggestion here. I'm not even sure how this came up.
I think you're just dying to talk to me about some dude's torn rectum.
Yeah, I think, oh, nearly killed him when the colorectal surgeon, who actually had students in his office, like a teaching whatever setting, he sent the students out of the room and leaned up against him and says, okay, what you don't have is some sort of hemorrhoid thing. What you have is a torn butthole. It's yeah, it's not good.
So James LaGrosse, he was great.
James LaGrosse, yes. Oh, no, okay, I know why I was talking about it. Because they were talking about how in SAG-AFTRA, if you're an actor, they have different tiers. And you qualify for insurance if you earn enough money during the period. But if you don't earn enough money, you will go like a year without insurance if you fall to the next tier down. So that's why you apply to get, you know, something, you know, something that is union work so you can get your insurance.
That's supposed to be pretty decent insurance, right?
I guess, but you definitely have to work to qualify for it. So another reason why it's tough to make art. Okay, so back to the movie. Blah, blah, blah. They can't find the tape, but they put a whole bunch of bugs in Will Smith's stuff, which was pretty fun. And we got Jack Black teching it up in the background.
And along with Seth Green.
There's good comic relief there. And, of course, the combination of Busey Khan do the other Keystone Cop routine on the other side of the computers. So the NSA, they can't find it, but they're going to, like, smear him. Because if he has the tape, he's going to come up with it. So they need to smear him to ruin his credibility. And this is where we find out that, by the way, Will Smith's wife in the movie is Regina King, who is great. I love her.
She's always great.
Yep. And she's been in a ton of stuff. And she's actually up for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress. And if Beale Street could talk. Just this week. We'll know in a couple days. By the time you listen to this episode, we'll know whether she won the Golden Globe. He has his old girlfriend, Rachel Banks, played by Lisa Bonet. We have not talked about a Lisa Bonet movie yet. This is the inaugural one.
Better get Angel Heart on the list.
Exactly. I think she played a small role in like Poetic Justice, that kind of stuff. So anyway, so she's an old girlfriend who actually, he still sees her, even though he had an affair with her, as it turns out, years ago that his wife knew about, but he still sees her because she is the intermediary between him and the surveillance expert known as Brill. And he's the one that had the tape that the mafia tape that was the topic of conversation between Tom Sizemore and Will Smith earlier in the movie.
Yeah. Did you mention that he was threatened to turn over who made the tape within a week or he'd be killed?
I did not mention it, but it would be a good time to mention that because there is that tension going on, too.
Yeah.
And the thing about Tom Sizemore's mafia is he doesn't give a shit. He will kill you.
Tom Sizemore's mafia is very cinematic.
I was hoping they would do a little ghost dog action and break into some rap lyrics, but they did not.
He seemed really close, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So do you think he was high to the gills on cocaine during that role?
Yes.
Yes, me too.
I don't think it was makeup that was making him so sweaty.
Yes, I don't think so either. Yes. Yeah. That crazy look in his eyes, I think, just was just his own. He brought his own chemical preps to set. Anyway, so we have this mysterious guy named Brill. So he meets up with Rachel. He thinks because he's now being his career is being ruined and all this stuff is getting out about him and his credit cards are being messed with. And he thinks this is actually the mob taking revenge on him. He's not aware of the NSA angle yet.
Yeah, because the smear job is so good, he gets fired, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. He gets fired. They
ruin him. He gets kicked out of his house.
Yes. He loses his wife and his kids and his job and all his money. And so the only thing he can do is contact Rachel and find out from Brill, like get in touch with him to, I don't know, what the purpose is to deal with the tape part of it. Like, what is his plan?
Well, when he finds out that Dan Aykroyd has moved in with his wife, he starts to get really pissed off and tries to figure out how to take revenge.
Okay, I am missing the reference.
Sorry, that was a Trading Places reference.
I'm trying to think. That wasn't Terry Garr. No, that was Shelley Long. No.
Jamie Lee Curtis?
Jamie Lee Curtis, there we go. Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Beep! Oh, good one, Drew.
You leave that in.
laugh like I just told you a joke. He ends up going to have this meeting with Brill. And Brill, in a shocking turn to me, because I haven't seen this movie in a while either, Brill is Gabriel Byrne from Miller's Crossing and Stigmata. And I was thinking, what is going on? Did I misread the cast list? No, it turns out that was a red herring.
Yeah. I had totally forgotten Gabriel Byrne was in this movie. He must have needed that SAG-AFTRA insurance.
Maybe so, yes. Brill, Gabriel Byrne, tends to be the fake Brill, and he ends up being rescued by a very reluctant to rescue anybody, Gene Hackman, who's the real Brill. And he's a retired NSA agent who is not happy about being discovered because he likes his, but much like the conversation character of Harry Call, Edward Lyle, aka Brill, does not like the fact that his privacy is being invaded now.
Yes. He's got a cat. That's about all he wants in his life.
Exactly. Yes. And it's fun because at this point, there's a ton of stuff that links this movie to the conversation. Mm-hmm. Like when the NSA figures out who Gene Hackman is, they actually pull up a photo of him from the conversation. His little office that he works at is set up very much like his office in the conversation, except they explain it's all like a Faraday cage instead of just a fenced off area in a warehouse. So, yeah. So there's and the recording, the sound of the recording when they actually have a very similar setup where they're trying to record the conversation between Will Smith and Lisa Bonet.
Yeah, same like crane shot and everything, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. And they'd have the same sound they had, like when they're not getting in as much audio information as they need. Mm-hmm. You have that same sound, which is really great. So watching these right in a row was beautiful for me. I really appreciated that. And, you know, at this point, it's like a chase movie.
Yeah, Brill, even though he's perpetually hangry, he still seems like a much better hang than Harry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's pretty funny.
He is. Yeah, he is hangry, right? He's hypoglycemic or something, so when his blood sugar mm-hmm. dips, he gets cranky. But, yeah, so they have to team up, and in very action movie sense, they have to solve the problem of getting Will Smith's life back and getting all the heat off of him.
Yeah, there was one particular line in this movie that made me really nostalgic for like these late 90s Bruckheimer Simpson action movies, where you could just tell that they wrote this one-liner in just so they could put it in the trailer and it would be awesome. But like after they're making their big escape, and Will Smith is exclaiming, wondering why he had to blow up the building. And Brill just yells at him, "Because you made a phone call." Oh, it was such a quintessential 90s action movie moment.
It's beautiful. It really was. I mean, I had a great time watching this movie. Even though it is super ridiculous, especially at the end.
It was laughably ridiculous at the end.
Yes. It was so ridiculous.
But you know what really saves it? Is Gene Hackman. He sells the shit out of the ending of this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's great. That's just the thing. And, you know, it turns out Will Smith is pretty likable, too.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody really did a pretty decent job with what they were given. Everybody seemed to be having a good time in this movie.
This movie is way better than it should be.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Yep. And maybe we could ignore the social commentary because we did not live up to the ideal of this movie. Like, we gave it all away. But I don't know. It still was fun. It wasn't a comedy like Beverly Hills Cop was a comedy.
No.
But it certainly had all that fun action movie stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, having some perspective now of you know, the last 20 years, there is a lot of gallows humor about, look, guys, we warned you and you still fucked yourselves.
Yeah. No matter what side of the aisle or even what country you were from, looking at the United States Congress right now, you might have said there have been warnings for many years. we'll see.
Indeed.
We'll see if this boat can right itself. Yeah, so I don't even need to give away the ending. It's just a fun ending. Everybody gets what they want, except for Lisa Bonet. She was an unfortunate casualty. Well, there were some other casualties, but...
Yeah, I mean, well, better ending for her in this movie than in Angel Heart.
If I remember, which I don't exactly, it seemed like Angel Heart was probably a very unpleasant movie for her character.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Enemy of the State, was it worth it?
Absolutely. And I, like you said, it was really rewarding watching it back to back with a conversation because there are so many fun nods, and watching it in that order is the perfect way to do it, because Enemy of the State is so light and it's just fun. It moves along. It doesn't make you think at all, really. It's a good pick me up after the awesome weirdness of the conversation.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I thought this was fun. I thought this, I mean, is it a better movie than The Conversation? No. Is it more fun? Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I have seen some movies lately that have been technically pretty great movies that were no fun to watch. I mean, The Conversation was actually fun to watch. It was just, it doesn't give you the happy-go-lucky throwing your fist in the air and a freeze frame at the end feeling that Enemy of the State does.
I saw a movie... not last night, but the night before, that was a really good movie that was beautifully made, well acted, but was no fun to watch at all.
Oh, let's talk. What movie is that?
Phantom Thread.
Oh.
Have you seen Phantom Thread?
I have not. I will.
I can't even tell you why it was so unpleasant to watch, but...
Well, I'll counter. I'll let you tell your story, but have you seen Hereditary?
No, I don't think I can.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe just wave it off. I mean, it's a good movie. I liked it. I thought a lot about it. but it was unpleasant to watch. So much so that I got about halfway through A Quiet Place and just pulled the plug. I'm like,
Hereditary ruined A Quiet Place?
Yeah, pretty much. Because like, nah, I'm good. I mean, okay, I get the idea. Nothing good is going to come at the end of the movie. like I don't know if you know about A Quiet Place or have seen it.
I know about it. I have not seen it.
Yeah. No. Turns out it's kind of scary. You get the idea what's going on. It's this tragic setup. I'm good. I was like, nope. Turns out I have two long movies to watch before I have to record a podcast. So I will maybe look at. Also, I did not watch Bird Box for the same reason. Nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Family and peril movies. they take on a different sensibility now.
Yeah. I remember our Uncle John, when I think I was specifically asking him if he's seen the movie Trees Lounge, and he was probably my age at the time, and so I was probably 15 years younger, and he's like, yeah, I don't really want to watch movies about middle-aged guys who just fuck up all the time. Like, you know, kind of hits too close to home. Nothing really good about it. Nothing takes you out of, you know, takes you to a happy place. Like, eh, I respect that. Now I totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, sorry. So The Phantom Thread. So he was, I mean, obviously it was a technically good movie because it won a bunch of Oscars or was up for a bunch of Oscars, right?
It was. I mean, it's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie with Daniel Day-Lewis. And it is beautiful. It is a beautiful movie. But when it ended, I was like, what the fuck? What? I won't spoil anything about it, except that
you did not have that satisfying but tragic ending like There Will Be Blood.
you know, There Will Be Blood probably left me with a very similar feeling.
Yeah, okay.
But I also watched, my wife and I watched a lot of movies over the past week because we both had a lot of time off. We watched Darkest Hour.
Oh, okay. And what'd you think?
You want to talk about Gary Oldman hamming it up? I think that movie was made for him to ham it up.
Was it good, though? I mean, did you enjoy it?
It was good. It was really interesting watching it on the heels of Dunkirk.
Yeah, I have not watched Dunkirk yet, although it's on the list.
Yeah, so yeah, we watched Dunkirk too, together. She was up for that after watching Interstellar. We watched Mission Impossible Fallout.
Oh, and was that good?
It was great. I loved it. We watched The Post.
Oh, I've seen that actually.
Yeah, was I didn't really know what to expect out of the movie, but it was quite good.
Yeah, not bad.
That was another movie where you just get a bunch of like people who are good at their craft and they kind of elevate a story that and make a movie that's better than it probably deserves to be.
Let me just make sure. That's the Meryl Streep movie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks,
yeah.
Steven Spielberg, Mr. Show.
Oh, yeah. David Cross, Bob Odenkirk.
Mm-hmm. Both of them.
Oh, okay. Let's see. What did I watch? I watched, a movie called Assassination Nation.
Oh, how was that?
It was very stylish. Ultimately, it was a little too, like, it's like a teen movie. Are you familiar with it?
No.
It's,
although Netflix keeps recommending it to me.
It's very stylish. It's like a group of teens who, social media turns their town against one of them specifically. And it's like there's a voiceover narration with some cool teen quips and observations. And it's got heavy on the social commentary of how people can be radicalized. And it stars, stars is a strong word, Joel McHale. But it's worth watching. I mean, I thought it was worth watching. If nothing else, for the style. So yeah, I watched the animated movie, Constantine, City of Demons.
Huh. How's that?
Nah. It's fine.
Was Constantine blonde?
I think he was. I think he was.
Okay.
He certainly was smoking throughout, so that detracts. I watched Hereditary, like I said. I watched It, the new version, 2017's version of It. I see.
What'd you think?
You know, Dougie's profile picture is Pennywise from the new It. So I see it enough that I'm like, oh, I should probably actually watch this movie. I thought it was pretty good. I'm still interested in seeing the second half of it, but yeah, I thought it was fine. I think if I remember correctly, it's, I guess just as much Deus Ex Machina as the other movie, cause that's probably just how the book is. But it was interesting that they didn't go back and forth in time. They just went right to the kids version.
How'd they deal with the troublesome resolution?
They didn't have to.
Okay.
So that was nice. I appreciated that.
So they wrote around it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and the girl character is fun and compelling. So even though she's, you know, she has a shitty life, but that's okay. That's just her character. And then I watched with my daughter on New Year's Eve. I watched Cop and a Half, New Recruit, which is a perfect movie for my 9-year-old, because it had, I don't know the actress's name. I guess I can look, a 12-year-old who plays like a kid who wants to be a cop because her dad was a cop. Something bad happened to him, blah, blah, blah. But she ends up with a crusty old detective played by Lou Diamond Phillips.
I am glad to hear he's getting work.
He is. And it's interesting because, you know, he pops up in a lot of places. He popped up in all those Tales from the Crypt episodes, and he popped up in, I think he does, like, he's done some voiceover, like audible narration, and he ends up in some of the Twilight Zone radio play remixes.
Oh, so funny.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably done a bunch of other stuff too. I always considered him to be one of the lesser of the young gun actors. But he's actually kind of charming in this role. He plays the crusty old guy. And Wallace Shawn plays the principal of the school. And it's absolutely everything you want for a little kid movie. It doesn't have a lot of... it reminds me of like those Gene Jones live action Disney movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of peril, but it's pretty cartoony. The plot is, you know, paint by numbers, kid thriller. Works out just fine.
Easy to follow.
Yeah. Yep. And easy to follow, not too scary, but fun. And there's lots of wisecracks and again, kid messages and stuff. So Journey is particularly, she doesn't like movies that are disturbing. So she's quick to pull a plug. So it was interesting to actually have it. And she wanted to stay up till midnight to watch the ball drop, which is, turns out, you know, New Year's Eve programming on TV is not intended for kids. Like, half the people are drunk.
Yeah, even the hosts,
yeah,
right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So, and apparently ABC didn't even show the ball drop, which I thought was kind of funny. A weird choice. And 10 minutes before the New Year's, Chrissy Teigen described vaginal steaming.
Wow.
Like, huh. That seems like, again, a weird choice. But, oh well.
One of the greatest things about living in Alaska and not having to deal with tape delayed stuff anymore is we get to celebrate New Year's at 8 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And it's fine. It's quite enjoyable.
Did you see what Netflix did, though?
No.
Netflix had available all of these countdowns for kids. Like, you went to the kids section and you could have picked your favorite show from Netflix and they did a countdown. So you could actually trick your kids and say, hey, we're going to do the countdown, like at 8 o'clock or whatever, and just do the countdown. Everybody says, yeah, they all go to bed and you can have the rest of the night to yourself. So I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, Journey's a little too old to be fooled like that. But although,
did she make it to 12?
Oh yeah. Unfortunately, because we've been on vacation and acting like it, our sleep schedule has gotten massively screwed up. I think we all of us within like 10 minutes passed each other in the hall, like at 2:30 in the morning the other day. None of us had been asleep yet.
Yikes.
So that means like we sleep late and then we can't get back on track. And mm-hmm. so that'll be this weekend as we'll have to be forced to put ourselves to bed early. Oh, I also saw one more movie that I don't know if you've seen it, but I highly recommend it. It's called Mayhem.
Mayhem.
Yep. 2017.
This sounds really familiar.
It is, let's see, directed by Joe Lynch. And it's a virus spreads through an office complex, causing white-collar workers to act out their worst impulses. It is pretty great. I mean, it's again, it's sort of brainless, but it's fun and it's stylish.
I've seen part of this movie.
Yeah. I liked it. It was fun.
Have you seen Upgrade?
I have not. What is Upgrade? I always think of Idiocracy.
Yes. And this is a movie that's sort of set in the nearish future about a man who is the victim of a crime and ends up paralyzed and is offered an implant that could help him regain control of his motor functions.
Oh, so it's kind of like a prequel to Welcome to Marwen.
Does Steve Carell get an implant?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. It's actually making a joke because that seems like a downer. Is it a revenge movie?
A little bit.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a satisfying movie?
Yeah, I think it was. It was. I had really low expectations. One of the things I really appreciated about it after it was over was it did a really good job of subtle world building. So it's set in the future. There's, you know, fantastical technology. But the way it's introduced and the way it's sort of built into everything is, I thought, really clever. Because it was obviously not a high budget movie, but they really made the most of it.
Excellent. I'm adding it to my list. That's kind of what I felt about Mayhem. Although again, I don't know what to, cause it doesn't do any specific world building except that it sets itself up very quickly and very efficiently as a very specific kind of like zombie movie. It's fun. Any other housekeeping?
It's really slick out.
Yeah. I will take, especially it's supposed to be, I guess, super cold tonight, right?
Yeah.
It had been 40 degrees the last couple days, and now it's going to be like in the negatives.
Yeah. So it has been just warm enough to kind of liquefy the top layer of ice and snow everywhere. Another perilous story involving my pointy-toed work shoes. They have no traction.
Oh, that's not good.
And I went back to work this week after having almost 2 solid weeks off, and it was really slick. So I hadn't worn my anxiety-inducing pointy-toed work shoes in a while, but I was very aware that they have no traction, and I was trying to walk through an extremely slick parking lot. And I still managed to do like a comic book fall.
Oh no.
Where my feet just slipped right out from under me. I don't remember if I told this story before. About a year and a half ago when I was leaving karate with my little ones, and there was just this patch of ice from water dripping on the sidewalk. And I stepped on it the perfect way, and both my feet went out. And I fell all the way backwards and slammed my head against the sidewalk.
That was a scary story.
Yeah. I mean, I was supposed to go take a plane ride and then a helicopter ride the next day that I canceled out of, made my coworker go alone. Didn't feel great about that, but it was the right decision. So very similar this time, but I somehow managed not to crack my head on the pavement.
Thank goodness.
but really whacked the crap out of my tailbone.
Oh, no. So
I've been kind of limping around. It was also the first day in a couple weeks that I played racquetball with Dad.
Hmm.
So that was troubling. But I seem to be on the mend. I don't think there's any permanent damage.
Thank goodness.
Do you want to, I just thought of this. Do you want to hear a quick car karma story?
Sure.
I don't know if you heard through the grapevine, but my wife bought a car this weekend.
Nope, I've heard nothing. So congratulations.
Yeah, she bought a car. We weren't really planning on it, but it just happened and the circumstances we were happy with. So we pulled the trigger.
Cool.
Which meant we have been down to two cars for just a few weeks now. Now we're back up to three cars. So it's time to get her car ready to sell.
What does she drive? She drives the Pilot. No.
Yeah.
Oh, she does? Okay. So she drives the Pilot.
It's a 2006 Honda Pilot. Email me at dsnuts@notinacreepyway.com if you want to buy it.
There you go.
So it was due for an oil change, which we had already scheduled for this week. So perfect timing to throw a couple other minor things that we've been living with that we'll want to get fixed if we're going to sell it. So we took it in, and you know, much like my car that I recently sold, I have mixed feelings because it's older. It's time to upgrade. But at the same time, it's been a really good car. We've never had to do anything major to it. Just like the normal maintenance. It's got almost 120,000 miles on it, and it's been great. So took it in today to get the oil change. So there's a few things we need to do to get it ready to sell. You know, oil change, fix a couple of, like, the TPMS light is coming on a bunch, so I'll get that fixed. It needs a new windshield because it's, you know, it's an Alaskan windshield. It's kind of looking like a jigsaw puzzle. And get it detailed. And I think that's about it, and we'll be ready to sell it. And then I got a phone call from the dealership.
Oh, no.
It has leaks. Really minor leaks.
Oh, okay.
But they'll be a problem if they're not taken care of soon.
Leaks from?
The main transmission seal.
Okay.
And some sort of seal that's behind the oil pump. So some sort of coolant seal. Both extremely labor-intensive things to fix. Oh,
God.
So, yada yada, it's going to be $4,000. And so there's that sort of momentary ethical quandary. Like, I'm going to get rid of this car. I could just hope no one notices it when they go to buy it.
No, but, four words, as is, where is.
Yeah, but I would know.
Try to sell it to somebody's teenager.
Yeah, I don't think... I contemplated that scenario. I should
have bought it from you. What are you saying?
Oh, hey, if you want it, I'll give you a good deal. No, I decided just go ahead and bite the bullet and trying to keep some perspective on it. Because overall, like for the lifetime of the car, it's certainly been due for something like this. And we haven't had to do it yet. So, you know, looking at how long we've had it and how little maintenance we've had to do on it, or how many repairs, how little repairs we've had to do on it. You know, over the life of the car, this seems perfectly fine. But the timing is painful.
Yes. Yep, brutal.
I actually thought to myself, God, it's not like I bought a camera or anything.
Exactly. Well, what you should have done is parked your Pilot at the Sea Galley.
Yeah. That was crazy this morning. We were actually coming from dropping the car off. So all four of us were in the car because my wife dropped me off at work as we were driving by the Sea Galley.
It was on fire.
Aglow, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it was already boarded up, and I think we're already scheduled for demolition, maybe. So this just sped along that process.
Yes, seems very suspect.
Kind of, yeah. Also, did you see the Seward and Tudor bridge strike?
Yeah, so a dump truck drove under it with the bed up?
Yes.
Is that the story I heard?
That is the story that the police are saying.
What?
And knock the entire dump bed off of the truck. Like the bed was laying on the ground next to the... Yeah.
I imagine he was going probably about
highway 60 speed.
Miles an hour.
Yeah. It turns out after even before earthquakes, bridge strikes were a big deal. And to anybody who lives in Anchorage, if you're sitting on the Tudor overpass over the Seward Highway, stopped at a light, that bridge moves on a good day.
Yes.
I mean, that's a scary place to be stopped anyway. Mm-hmm. And then having it damaged by a truck slammed into it is problematic.
Yeah, they had lanes going underneath the bridge, the overpass closed, but the overpass itself was open.
Part of it, yeah. They closed, well, for a little bit, they closed everything, which is good. But I think it's still closed, two lanes under or one lane under, two lanes over, something are closed. But yeah, it seems very inconvenient.
Yeah, I drove over it this morning.
Oh, okay.
I went down Tudor, got off on the Tudor exit.
You actually visited all the disaster sites this morning.
Yeah, I didn't realize what was going on at Tudor. It was just traffic was really backed up and lanes were closed. I didn't know why yet. Then I found out later that they closed lanes because of damage to the overpass. And that kind of broke my brain a little bit. The overpass I just drove over is damaged.
Yes. Yeah.
This seems not okay.
Yeah.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're going to leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric.